From 90.9 WBUR, I'm Jill Kaufman. This is Radio Boston. Coming up, the latest on last night's multiple gas explosions and fires in Lawrence, North Andover, and Andover.
I was very scared, and I just wanted to get my son and my dogs to safety.
More than 8,500 gas customers were affected, according to Columbia Gas, which serves the area. Governor Baker stressed that as homeowners return to their neighborhoods, they should be cautious.
It's very important that people do not try to turn on their own gas. Please wait for the utilities.
How could this happen? Senator Elizabeth Warren says Columbia Gas needs to be held accountable.
The spotlight's on Columbia. I want to make sure the spotlight stays on them when the emergency, the immediate threat is gone.
That's all coming up next on WBUR's Radio Boston.
Thanks for listening to the Radio Boston podcast. If you'd like to support WBUR, go to radioboston.org and click the pledge button in the upper right-hand corner. Okay, back to the show.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman. Public safety workers, along with crews from Columbia Gas, are going house to house right now in the cities of Lawrence, North Andover, and Andover. That is after yesterday's shocking series of gas explosions and fires that forced the evacuation of thousands of people. All public schools and many businesses in all three cities were closed today. Officials are asking for patience as they warn that it will take time to make sure it is safe for people to go back home. Right now, Lawrence Mayor Dan Rivera is holding a press conference. He is frustrated. He wants to find out what is going on, how this happened, why it happened, and he needs to create and is creating a plan to clear dwellings and get people back home. Basically, he said earlier today, it is especially complicated in the city of Lawrence.
We're a dense community. We have more people. The housing stock is different. The threat to safety is different. So we're doing it different, and we deserve a different strategy.
What we know at this time is that one young man from Lawrence died yesterday. Leonel Rondon was 18 years old. He was in a parked car when a nearby house exploded and the chimney came down on the car. And at this point, there are at least 20 people listed as injured. We also know that the incident is stabilizing and all fires were put out last night. It is hard to imagine, though, that there were 70 incidents of fires, explosions, or gas odors reported. Columbia Gas, which serves the area, said today it is working to restore service as fast as it can. Crews are needed to visit each of the 8,600 affected customers to shut off each gas meter, each one, and conduct a safety inspection. MEMA said overnight about 3,500 gas meters were checked. Right now, Governor Baker has said that Eversource has been put in charge of the recovery. We'll be checking in on that as well. People are very frustrated with how little information they've been getting thus far from Columbia Gas. This is Ray Santilli, assistant town manager in North Andover.
People are being told to call the 800 number at Columbia Gas, but now we're getting calls from people saying they're calling the 800 number, and it says we're closed.
We are spending the entire hour today on Radio Boston getting updates from the area, speaking with residents, public officials, and of course our reporters, and starting with WBUR senior reporter Anthony Brooks in North Andover. Hello, Anthony.
Hi, Jill.
And thanks for joining us. I understand you
Sure.
are speaking from a shelter right now. Where are you and who else is there?
Yeah, so I'm at the North Andover High School where the gym has been turned into a temporary Red Cross shelter. Last night, some 65 people forced out of their homes because of those mandatory evacuations stayed here. There are still about 16 to 20 people here today. The folks who are organizing the shelter and running it say they expect more people to be back tonight. And really the focus right now in this shelter is just that. It's shelter. And the Red Cross says after people get back into their homes, the focus will be on helping the folks who lost their homes. I talked to some of them today as well, helping them with temporary shelter and helping them with putting them in touch with agencies that can help them and help replace their personal possessions. So that's the situation right now. It's quite calm. There aren't a lot of people here. But as you know, I was out in the neighborhood talking to some other folks.
Right. We want to hear from some of those folks. But could you just say a little bit first about what you are hearing on the street from local leaders, from officials or utility workers talking about what's happened?
Well, I spent most of today talking to residents. I mean, what local officials are saying, I think you summed up pretty well. I mean, the governor, for example, and utility officials are all sort of delivering the same message, and that is this is going to take time. Charlie Baker, the governor of Massachusetts, has made the point that the first thing that has to happen is we've got to make sure that everybody is safe. And so to that end, communities like North Andover are posting lists of streets where residents can actually look to see if it's safe for people to go back into their homes. And I've talked to some folks who are already back in their homes and their street is on the safe list. And I've talked to some folks who are not back in their homes and their street is not yet deemed safe. And some people are in their homes regardless.
All right. And Anthony,
but the big point that go ahead.
I just want to let you know that at the press conference that is underway right now, Governor Charlie Baker has just declared a state of emergency for the affected areas. So that is going on. You did speak with several people. You want to? Can we hear from some of them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I wandered through a couple of different neighborhoods, essentially where houses burned last night. I was on Herrick Road in North Andover. A house burned on Herrick Road. And I spoke to Kelly Davis, who lives just up the street from that house. And she really talked to express the fears of a lot of people when the confusion started last night and people smelled smoke. They didn't know what was going on. There were suddenly fire engines and all kinds of rumors. And here's a little bit of what Kelly Davis said.
It's kind of like a war zone all of a sudden last night. My little daughter, she was scared to death, and I couldn't find my cat. So it was confusing. It was scary, I guess is the good word to use. I stayed calm for her, but that's basically, we were all scared.
And Jill, here's another resident on that same street. Leslie Kaplinski lives right next door to the house on Herrick Road that burned last night. And she told me what that was like. Of course, she knows the neighbors who actually didn't want to talk to reporters today. But here's a little bit of what Leslie Kaplinski said.
And we saw that it was smoldering, but we understood that there weren't enough fire trucks to deliver the water from the hydrants to the house, and it's just so sad to see it had smoldered for several hours before they were able to actually put water on it, and we feel horrible that our neighbor has lost their home, and it's very sad, and what can we do for them? They need everything at this time.
Anthony, I have to say, it must have been so jarring not to know what was going on, but to see these things happening, not to know if anything had been contained yet. You know, there's only so much that a tweet can do or an alert from your town on your smartphone can do. It must have been quite something for these folks.
Yeah, I think it really was. I think what I heard from a lot of folks today, though, was how quickly the community came together and how much people really relied on each other to find out what was going on. And, you know, there were some initial, I've heard from a couple of people who sort of drew the connection to, is this is something awful happening, like a terrorist attack? I mean, a couple of different people said that out loud. I mean, that's how frightening it was. Now, I want to hasten to add, there was absolutely no evidence of that whatsoever. But I'm just reporting that to give you a sense of just how alarming and how absolutely terrifying this was last night for a lot of people.
There's a big question of that will not be answered for some time, I imagine, about how people will maybe be reimbursed for this loss, either the loss of their property, their personal property, the home itself, the money they're spending to have to live somewhere else temporarily. And there is a difference between homeowners and renters. I know homeowners will likely, in many cases, be covered for fire, you know, if that is the case. But renters are a different story. So what do North Andover residents, where you are, know at this point about that kind of coverage and about?
Well, I mean, I think these are among the questions that I think a lot of people are going to be dealing with in the days ahead, Jill. But it's funny that you mentioned renters, because while I was walking around the neighborhood where I came across at least three or four different structures that had burned, I met Joe Montefort. He owns a four-unit building that caught fire. His tenants were okay. They found a place to stay last night. But they are now out and looking for places to live. Here's a little bit of what Joe Montefort said about his house and his tenants.
They are out of here, and this could be a total, and they have to find a new residence. In the first two apartments, all their stuff was destroyed. Luckily, my insurance company, gives them $1,500 apiece, which is good, because that pretty much covers their possessions.
I don't know about that.
$1,500 a piece, we'll see if that covers it. But that answers at least part of your question. I mean, it really depends, obviously, on the particular resident and whether the renters had rental insurance, mm-hmm. What kind of coverage the landlord had. But that was one of them.
I know what is amazing is that, of course, people are pulling together and trying to help out. There are several organizations already up and running. We have things posted on WBUR.org if people are looking for how they can help. But what about disaster relief, Anthony?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, here at the Red Cross does an awful lot in the early days of this kind of disaster. And as I said, the Red Cross right now is focusing on just giving people shelter who need shelter. And then the sort of next phase is how to help people who really need long-term help. And I talked to Barbara Burnside. She's a resident of North Andover. She's also a disaster relief and mission coordinator for New England, for the United Methodist Church. And I spoke to her here at Red Cross headquarters in North Andover about how people can help and what people, the kind of help that is necessary in the days ahead and the kind of help that is not necessary. Here's a bit of what she said.
You can do things like organizing a fundraising campaign. Please do not donate stuff unless it's requested. But all kinds of organizations need money.
And Jill, it's funny. I mean, it's not funny. It's interesting. I hear that again and again in different disasters that I've covered. People, this is a message that goes out again and again. People have a good impulse, and they immediately go into their basement and start putting together piles of clothes and old things and think that that's going to be useful to people. It's not.
All right.
Money is useful. The piles of stuff that doesn't get distributed, Barbara Burnside described as the disaster after the disaster.
Right.
So don't do that.
Right. It all feels very familiar and not a good familiarity. Anthony Brooks in North Andover, Massachusetts, thank you so much for sticking with us today. I know you're going to go out there and do some more coverage. We'll be looking for your pieces and listening to you on air later on tonight or tomorrow morning.
Okay, Jill, thank you.
This is Radio Boston. We are talking about what happened yesterday in Andover, North Andover, Lawrence, explosions, fires that were related to Columbia Gas and to the pipelines there. There's no word yet on exactly what happened. That is certainly going to be an investigation ongoing. The one thing we can talk about, though, is how gas pipelines work in the first place and the risks that are associated with them and with other utilities. Joining us on the line to talk about that is Brigham McCown. He is the former head of the Federal Pipelines and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. He's also the founder and chairman of the group, the Alliance for Innovation and Infrastructure. Welcome to Radio Boston, Brigham McCown.
Hi, Jill. Thanks for having me on today.
We're glad you can help explain something about infrastructure here. You've had also experiences with crises like this before. How is what happened in the Merrimack Valley in these three towns different from what you've seen in the past, and where have those been also?
Sure. Well, usually when we see a pipeline incident, it's a single point of failure. So you have an isolated area that's affected. We've seen that 6 years ago in San Bruno, California. We've seen that up on Alaska's North Slope with oil. We've seen that at various other locations, including Mayflower, Arkansas. I think what makes this a lot different is that you have multiple ignition sources, which tends to suggest that whatever event occurred caused multiple leaks across a fairly wide geographical region, and that's pretty unusual. Last time that happened was in Chicago in 1992, and that was the result of an overpressure situation.
So we can't ask you to know what happened, and we don't want to speculate too much, but can you tell us a bit about how these gas pipelines work to understand what a good day looks like and what hazards do exist that you sort of sign on the dotted line when you sign up for town gas?
Absolutely. Well, you know, we use natural gas, and we've used it for nearly a century to heat our homes, to heat our businesses, to power our factories. It's something we rely upon each and every day, and I think it's something that, by and large, we take for granted, and it does work most of the time, almost always without fail. You know, and the way the pipeline system is set up, we have a lot of pipelines in the country, 2.6 million miles, but nearly 2 million miles of those are what we call natural gas distribution lines. If you think of pipelines like roads, you have small roads where the gas comes from. They merge onto larger highways and freeways and interstate highways to then be brought to a certain town. And then much smaller lines bring them to your house, just like city streets or back alleyways. And those lines are the ones that were affected yesterday. And typically, those are operated at very low pressure, something along the lines of what you would put air in your tires versus those interstate highways can travel up to 1,000 PSI or more. So to have this kind of event from a low-pressure pipeline, it's very unusual.
So let me back it up for a little bit. You say you believe it was the smaller lines that go right to the homes that were affected?
Yes.
And I realize we don't know.
Yeah, well, from what I can tell right now, because, you know, it's the natural gas distribution lines that go into the neighborhoods that go to the homes. And because these issues happen in so many different areas, I think we have to believe that they are those smaller lines. And those are the lines that are operated by Columbia Gas and every other gas utility around the country.
So is it a confluence of really bad circumstance, or this is about the pressure, you know, the pressure of the gas? Somewhere there was something that got unsettled that blew this forward in a different way?
Yeah, and I think that's what both my former agency is looking at with their on-site team and the National Transportation Safety Board, headed up by the chairman, is up there right now taking a look at it. That's one of the things they're going to be looking at. They're going to be talking to the gas officials about the pressure in their lines. They're going to be talking to them about any construction activities that have been occurring immediately preceding this accident to try to figure out exactly what occurred. We do know that in older areas of the country, you know, like Boston, Cincinnati, where I'm speaking from, we have a lot of older lines made out of cast iron. They tend to leak a little bit, and there's an online replacement program going on right now to try to get all that older pipe out of the ground, but it's very costly, very time-consuming.
Right, and there have been calls for that along the way, all over New England and elsewhere in the country, that there are leaks, small leaks, and something needs to change. As far as what a recovery on this kind of infrastructure could look like, maybe by experience, what's been done, and how long can you imagine this situation might take to fix and clean up?
Yeah, Jill, that's a great question. And I think some of your previous coverage that I caught, what the local officials are saying is accurate. It's going to take a while because, first of all, you have to de-energize all of the natural gas and, in many cases, remove electric power as well. Because remember, once the natural gas gets out of the pipe, it still needs an ignition source. So you have to remove all those ignition sources. Then you have to go back and plug all the leaks, replace the lines. That can take months or longer, and it's going to be highly inconvenient for a large number of people for some time to come.
I want to ask you a question about Columbia Gas, or maybe about utility companies overall and being held accountable. You wrote after the San Bruno, California incident, where a high-pressure natural gas transmission sparked this deadly explosion and fire, you wrote about holding utility companies accountable when things like this happen. In that case, it was Pacific Gas and Electric Company. And so what is your take now on Columbia Gas and the accountability?
Yeah, well, I think it's too early to tell whether Columbia has done the right thing or whether this is an event that's beyond their control. One of the things that I would caution everybody on is to wait until the facts come out and to see exactly what transpired. But, you know, one of the things that I think we all have to be concerned about is the need for utility companies to be reinvesting in their infrastructure. Their infrastructure is the same as our roads and bridges. If you don't maintain it, if you don't upgrade it, you know, it tends to start falling down. And that's not overnight, but mm-hmm. over a period of years, decades, and even longer, the failure to reinvest in that infrastructure will manifest itself in issues like this. And
right.
Let's hope that's not the case. And I will say this, Jill, Columbia has been seen as one of those utilities that has had a pretty active pipe replacement program in place for some time.
All right, Brigham McGowan, thank you so much for explaining a little bit into what happened yesterday, possibly, but just giving us the lay of the land. Former head of the Federal Pipelines and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, Brigham McGowan, thanks again so much.
Absolutely.
Joining us on the line now is Congressman Seth Moulton. He represents Massachusetts' 6th District, which includes Andover and North Andover. Congressman Seth Moulton, thank you for joining us today.
It's good to be back.
Tell me where you are right now, and what can you tell us about response efforts so far for your constituents?
Well, I mean, the response from local authorities has been amazing. I was up at the I landed in Boston last night from Washington and went straight to North Andover. I went to the high school there where local responders had set up a shelter, and North Andover residents and some residents from surrounding towns were there. And in remarkable spirits, the Red Cross volunteers were out there organizing everything. We had ordinary citizens showing up and delivering supplies, food, water. Everybody was pitching in and everybody was in good spirits. It was a great example of the American spirit in the face of a disaster like this.
Of course.
But on the other hand, we have this gas company, Columbia Gas, that didn't even bother sending out a notice that there was a problem until 5 hours after the first explosion.
You were trying to reach them last night, yourself or your office. I'm sure others were as well. Were you able to make contact with them?
No. I've tried repeatedly to contact the gas company, and they have not returned my calls. But, you know, being responsive to elected officials is one thing. They should do that. But far more important is to take care of their customers. And they didn't. They failed to do it. They didn't even let people know there was a problem. So thank God we have amazing state and local police, firefighters, the emergency personnel, the first responders who got out there and told people that they needed to evacuate, told people how to remain safe in the face of this gas seeping out into their homes, into the community.
So utility
contacted the electrical company to shut down the power. I mean, that's all due to local officials, not due to the gas company.
So there is a question of Columbia Gas's accountability here, of course. We'll be speaking in a little bit with Senator Markey. Senator Warren and Senator Markey both are calling for hearings to look into these explosions. I want to play some tape from Elizabeth Warren, who says Columbia Gas needs to be held accountable.
Right now, the emergency is people are moved out of their homes. So everybody's here. Everybody's got the spotlights turned on. And the spotlight's on Columbia. I want to make sure the spotlight stays on them when the emergency, the immediate threat is gone.
Senator, Congressman Moulton, you're frustrated with Columbia. They are doing what they can now. They are on the ground and they are working hard. But what about accountability?
The senator is right. And, when she was in Washington last night, she was in touch with me up in the district. And we were talking about this, about how we've got to hold their feet to the fire. But in the meantime, right now, we just got to make sure that people are safe. So there will be a time for accountability, and we are going to hold hearings or do whatever else is necessary to hold Columbia Gas accountable for this disaster, which, let's not forget, resulted in the death of a young man.
Of course, and injuries.
Multiple injuries, multiple homes destroyed. An absolutely terrible tragedy. It's just a human mistake. This isn't a natural disaster like the hurricane going on in North Carolina right now. This is an avoidable mistake by a corporation, and they need to be held accountable. And I know that myself and the rest of the delegation will do everything we can to do that.
All right. Your priorities are immediate response. So we'll let you get back to that. Congressman Seth Moulton from the 6th District of Massachusetts, thank you so much for taking time out with us today.
Thank you.
Stay with us on Radio Boston. More ahead on what happened in the Merrimack Valley last night. I'm Jill Kaufman. This is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman. As we continue to cover the explosions in Lawrence, North Andover, and Andover, we are hearing from residents. We are hearing from officials. Some residents have been cleared to return to their homes. Thousands remain without electricity and gas. Joining me right now is Massachusetts Senator Edward Markey. Good afternoon, Senator Markey.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on, Jill.
So glad to speak with you again. You've been stopping all around the area today in the Merrimack Valley. I know you spent some time at the command center in Lawrence. Can you talk about what's been going on there?
Yeah, well, what we have is two phases. The first phase is dealing with the immediate aftermath of the explosions, the fires. And then the next phase is an investigation. What happened? Could it have been prevented? What do we have to do in the future to make sure that it never happens again to any other family? So I was speaking up there in Lawrence at the command center to the head of the National Transportation Safety Board so that I could get the information from him. That's Robert Sumwalt. as to what he's going to do to make sure that this is done in a completely thorough and detached way, because we have to get the answers. And I talked to Skip Elliott, who is the head of the Pipeline Safety Agency across the country, to make sure, similarly, that we get the answers to these questions. Now, as that's occurring, we also simultaneously have an incredible relief effort that's going on up there. And I tip my cap to Lawrence. I tip my cap to Andover, North Andover. Just the response is overwhelming. The communities are responding. Fire departments from across the state.
Right. There's a big mutual aid effort.
Police departments from across the state. It is just absolutely impressive to be up there and to see the incredible response.
Senator Markey, I know you're calling for, you and Senator Warren are calling for hearings on these explosions. This is not, well, pipelines are not a new issue for you. You brought forward the Safe Pipes Act some years ago. Do you think that legislation goes far enough? That is not as much, as I understand it, excuse me if I have this wrong, about these kinds of explosions, but about leaks and about efficiency, waste of money, pollution. Of course, safety is always a part of pipeline matters, but can your legislation do anything new? And can it be, should it be rewritten with more of an attention to these old pieces of infrastructure?
Well, I wrote a report back in 2013 that found that consumers in Massachusetts lose as much as $1.5 billion from natural gas that they may never have received because it just leaks out of these pipelines. And nationally, that could be up to $20 billion for the whole country over a 10-year period. So I've been focusing upon this issue of leaky gas pipes, of the aging infrastructure, of the need to have a discussion about how we upgrade, how we ensure that we have the most modern system that is in place. Now, here, we don't know yet exactly what caused this problem. So I want to be careful, even as I'm speaking to you, Jill, so that I'm not concluding what happened. Some of our pipelines are more than 100 years old.
So,
it's into that kind of a situation that if you add the wrong amount of pressure, that you might wind up with catastrophic consequences.
Right. So let me pull back. If I could pull back for a moment. You know, we don't know yet, sir, what happened. We do know that infrastructure in all type of utilities is quite old, especially in New England and older New England cities. And we know that some of these pipelines could be quite old and what they're made of deteriorates. So, you know, there was a very, very dark tweet I saw today on Twitter, and it was a comment that it's, after these explosions, it's infrastructure week again. That's a bad joke, but it points out to a need for federal money. I imagine somebody raising the issue that there is a need for money to be put toward all kinds of infrastructure like this for safety reasons, if let alone efficiency. Is there anything new that you can tell us about found money or money that will be found?
That's a very good point. You know, my father is from South Lawrence. My father is from Phillips Street in South Lawrence, which is right there in South Lawrence where all of this began. So the pipelines that were there when my father was growing up are the same pipelines that are there today. And that becomes an infrastructure issue over time. You pay a price when you haven't made the investment. And obviously, the Republicans in Congress are still unwilling to put together an infrastructure bill that can allow us to do this kind of work. It's going to be something that we see more frequently as each day, week, year goes by because of this aging infrastructure.
Right. And the urgency when we see something like this in three different towns, it's really stark.
It's an example of, well, Massachusetts. So we were a very prosperous state 100 years ago. And the question for us now, nationally, is do we recognize that and realize that we need to do an infrastructure upgrade? We have to just be cognizant of and accept the reality that a lot of it is old and getting more dangerous as each year goes by. Not just the cost of additional natural gas that people have to pay for that just leaks out of the pipes, but this is really a problem in all of America's older mm-hmm. cities. And because we're, you know, one of the most early industrialized states in our country, we have a lot of aging infrastructure, and that's why I am on the infrastructure committee. I have tried hard to say to my colleagues, Jim Inhofe and others, Republican conservatives from Oklahoma, I want to work with you on a bill to accomplish that goal. But the problem is that Trump and the Republicans put too much emphasis on giving a $1.5 trillion tax break than they did on creating a $1.5 trillion infrastructure bill.
Well, finish your thought. I apologize. Go ahead.
I said that would have much better served the American people.
Well, I'm sure your constituents, especially those in the Merrimack Valley, will be pushing along with you in the coming weeks as they continue to recover. I want to thank you so much, Senator Markey, for joining us and taking time away from where you have been in the Merrimack Valley today.
Thank you, Jill. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Massachusetts Senator Edward Markey. We're going to get back to the ground at this point. We turn now to WBUR reporter Shannon Dooling, who is in a shelter set up at the Arlington Middle School in Lawrence. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, Jill.
Can you describe the scene where you are? It's mid-afternoon, 3:37. How many people are there?
It has gotten much busier throughout the course of the day. I've been here at the Arlington Middle School shelter off and on since around 10 o'clock this morning, and the number of people has really shot up. There are about 220 people registered at the shelter right now. I'm told by a volunteer that they estimate their capacity is around 270. So they are getting pretty close to reaching capacity. There was mention of trying to maybe bring in extra beds, extra cots. Right now I'm actually sitting outside of the shelter, and there's just a massive traffic jam.
Shannon, what's the backup? Like, do folks, if they are turned away, are they given location to go to? I imagine
No one's been turned away. No one's been turned away at this point. So I don't know what the backup plan is at this point, but they, you know, there are concerns about reaching capacity. And I have not heard of backup plans. I know there's one other shelter in Lawrence, that is pretty much equally full at this point.
Can you tell me about some of the people that you've been meeting from Lawrence and who've been in this shelter, folks that you've been talking to?
Yeah, so I'll tell you about one man who kind of described the scene perfectly. Tom Laughlin is from South Lawrence. Let's just hear from him how he described the environment at the shelter.
Controlled chaos. I mean, this is a very fluid situation, but the people running the show are handling each problem as it happens.
So you can hear Laughlin, you know, kind of joking about it being controlled chaos, but also thankful for the volunteers and the organization that is sort of running the show here. But as I mentioned, it's just a crush of people at this point in the afternoon.
Right. And I understand that there are likely enough supplies in terms of, you know, water bottles, and that, of course, it's amazing how agencies show up with bedding and the things that are needed for a few hundred people in your particular shelter. But how are people dealing with medical needs? Because this is also an issue.
It is. There have been the occasional ambulances pulling up to the shelter to escort people to, you know, more medical services than what they can provide here at the shelter. But you know, one thing that is a concern for a lot of people is accessing medication, right? I mean, many of these people were evacuated from their homes with very little notice. They were told to leave as soon as they could. So there have been sort of what they're calling medication shuttles that are taking people into some of the neighborhoods that remain closed to local traffic, and they're allowing people to get into those neighborhoods and run into their homes, get their medications, and then come out. Let's hear from Pat Medina, who actually lives in Andover. She came to the shuttle this morning, or I'm sorry, to the shelter this morning, looking for some help in getting medication for her husband.
I mean, my husband takes 11 medications a day, and he's already missed last night and today so far, that I've got to get his meds.
She has to have his meds. She said that they left her a condo in Andover last night with their dog and the clothes they were wearing on their backs, and that's about it.
It's remarkable. And what's really remarkable is that these three towns, North Andover, Andover, Lawrence, are very, very different, mixed demographic. You've got white, Latino, largely Latino in Lawrence, and there's all sorts of different socioeconomic demographics, and everybody has been hit on an even way on this. If you have to leave, you had to leave. You had to evacuate. So we've been hearing from a lot of different types of people today, and everybody is rolling with it. Though we understand the frustrations so far that we've been hearing about have been with Colombia. Are people being communicated well enough with? Do they say where you are? In a shelter in the emergency setting kind of way.
Yeah, when people are showing up at this shelter in particular, they just need some place to go. Quite frankly, they can't go to their homes yet. I'm told that one of the reasons why the numbers are increasing right now is because, last night, maybe a lot of people stayed with family who are, nearby or in the area. Maybe they sprung for a hotel room for one night thinking, this will be over and done with. I'll be able to get back to my home. And now that they're hearing from government officials, from industry officials, that, it could be 3, 4, 5 days before you're able to get back into your home safely, I think, that means that people are coming to grips with the fact that I can't stay in a hotel for 5 nights. I have to go get my spot at the shelter.
Right.
And so they're coming in with suitcases. They're coming in with trash bags full of goods. But just as quickly as people are coming in looking for a place to stay, there are that many volunteers coming in and dropping off goods. So it's been quite a sight all day.
It's a lot of rolling planning. WBUR reporter Shannon Dooling, thanks to you to staying on the story. And we look forward to hearing what you're reporting on later on.
You're welcome.
We've been speaking with people all day today who have been impacted in some way by what happened yesterday in the Merrimack Valley. We spoke with Maureen Gallo of North Andover earlier this afternoon. She told us her neighbor just lost everything to a fire.
My friend's house burnt down, so we're devastated. She lives a couple blocks away from me. So we just walked up there to see her, and it's just horrible. She's the White House that everyone's seeing on TV on Herrick Road. She's happy. Her family's fine. But the house was her love, so she's devastated. The only thing they salvaged were plates. It's about it, everything else. So she did hear she probably won't be able to start rebuilding for another year and a half or something.
That's Maureen Gallo, who lives in North Andover. We are continuing our coverage of the explosions in Lawrence, North Andover, and Andover this afternoon. There's more ahead. I'm Jill Kaufman. This is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman. We've been following what's happening today in Lawrence and Andover and North Andover after a series of gas explosions in the area ignited fires in dozens of homes yesterday. Three explosions. At this point, some of the more than 8,500 gas customers who were affected may be able to return to home. There are thousands of other people, businesses also affected who did not have Columbia Gas. They are also put out by this situation. There are many who will be returning home and not have power. A lot of unanswered questions. We don't know what caused the explosions, but the National Transportation Safety Board and local and state authorities are investigating. We are staying on the ground with our reporters from WBUR. Callum Borchers now joining us from North Andover. Callum, how are you doing there?
Doing well. I've actually moved on to Lawrence. I'm near the Essex Plaza Shopping Center, which is quite a scene, Jill. It has become just an ocean of utility vehicles, not just from Columbia Gas, but from Eversource, from a lot of other utilities in New England that have come here to lend a hand.
And Eversource has just in the last hour been given authority to be in charge of the recovery. Is that what I understood?
That's right. That's what Governor Baker said at a news conference just recently. And he and other officials have been extremely critical of Columbia Gas's handling here. And, of course, the turning over of the lead response to another utility is a sign of the lack of confidence in this company right now.
Callum, I saw something that I believe you or somebody posted on Twitter from WBUR a little bit ago, a sort of testy interaction between residents and between Columbia Gas. What have you learned from Columbia Gas about what's happening?
Not much. Yes, what you saw was a video I tweeted from North Andover, where I was this morning. They had sort of an informal Q&A with a company representative and some customers, but they didn't really have a whole lot of information to share. It was the sort of typical exchange was customer asks question, a company representative jots it down on a clipboard and says, we'll get back to you. Here's one example of sort of how things played out.
We have other folks on our street that are running generators. And that it's a little bit of a concern. Can you speak to that? Is that a problem?
I'm sorry, I can't speak to that. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, is it possible that they just don't know? Did they, you know, did they give a timeline to anyone of what could be repaired or done?
Not a specific one. There was another customer who said, well, you know, you're going to get back to us as soon as you can. Is that today? Is that 5 weeks from now? The company rep you heard from there was Virginia Anthony. And she said, well, it won't be 5 weeks from now, but I can't say exactly when. It'll just be as soon as possible.
Were you able to speak with her one on one?
No, as anybody who saw that video, she sort of fled the scene as quickly as possible. And as I've reached out to Columbia Gas's designated spokeswoman on this issue to ask, will there be another public appearance when we can ask more questions? We're not hearing anything back from them. And keep in mind that it seems like communication channels are bad across the board. We had Seth Moulton, the congressman, on our air earlier today talking about how Columbia Gas won't return his calls. I mean, they won't call back members of Congress, never mind the press.
Right. We just spoke with him a few moments ago. So Governor Baker and others finished a press conference just a few minutes ago. I want to just hear from Governor Baker for a moment.
I certainly believe at this point that it is in the best interest of the people of Lawrence and North Andover and Andover for us to get a new team leading this effort and for us to be in a position to do that through a declaration of an emergency.
That new team then, Callum, that is Eversource and others showing sort of a discounting of Columbia's abilities at this point. What about the people in North Andover? We heard from some of them, but what is the mood there?
Well, the mood is frustration. You know, I spoke with Mike Pangione. He's the president of an insurance company in North Andover. He was at that Q&A this morning, and he basically was totally unsatisfied with the level of response he was getting.
To take your name and number and say we're going to get in touch with you. You showed up 50 minutes late here for this meeting. You had no answers to any of our questions. And now we have to trust you that you're going to get back in touch with us. I mean, you might as well have just picked somebody off the street and sent them here to answer these questions. I could have written all these questions down, too.
And, of course, then we heard from Ray Santilli. He's the assistant town manager in North Andover. He's also been frustrated. He says that his office at Town Hall is getting phone calls from customers who say they can't get through to Columbia Gas. They've been trying to get there, and they can't get information from the company either. This is what Santilli said to Virginia Anthony, the Columbia Gas rep, this morning.
People are being told to call the 800 number at Columbia Gas, but now we're getting calls from people saying they're calling the 800 number, and it says we're closed. So that seems to be a conflict. They're being told to call the 800 number, but when they do, it's being said that it's closed and there's nobody answering.
All right, Callum Borchers, at this point of the day, is there any update on the investigation itself as to what happened beyond what is maybe assumed at this point? In terms of pressure.
I think we're all sort of compulsively refreshing the Twitter feed for the NTSB. That's the Transportation Safety Board that has come in from D.C. They've arrived within the last few hours. They will be leading the investigation along with some other agencies as well. You might be surprised that that's the agency, but they do oversee gas pipelines in this country. So that hopefully will be where we learn what the actual source of this explosion was. We do know that the Columbia Gas was doing some utility work in the area before the explosions, but we don't know for sure if that was related.
All right, Callum Borchers from WBUR, reporter on the ground right now in North Andover. I imagine you'll be moving around a bit today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be with you, Jill.
Let's hear now from the National Fire Protection Agency. We have Guy Colonna joining us. Thanks so much for being a part of our afternoon checking in on the Merrimack Valley. Mr. Colonna.
Yes, hi, this is Guy Colonna with the National Fire Protection Association.
Right.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Sure. Now, you know, we know that more than a million homes in Massachusetts are heated by natural gas. We know that there is an assumption of safety. But what do we need to know, you know, to be safe in a situation like this? First of all, what did homeowners need to know about natural gas? What are the warning signs that there might be a leak?
Natural gas is odorized. It has a very distinctive smell based on the chemical odorant that is added to it. It smells like rotten eggs because of the sulfur chemical that's in it. So if you smell that, whether you're inside or outside in the vicinity of your home or some other structure, you should move away, move outside of it, and then either call 911 or call your utility. I know last night all of those resources were pretty much already occupied with the magnitude of the event. But certainly the guidance that was given by the emergency officials in the communities to evacuate all of those structures, I think, was a very good and effective guidance for the public.
Right. Mr. Colonna, I'm sorry to say this. This is a really hard phone line to hear you on, but what you've already laid out is very helpful, I believe, for those of us who also heat our homes with gas. So thank you so much for joining us briefly today here on Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
Guy Colonna, Senior Director of Engineering for the National Fire Protection Association. We all have been speaking with people we know, people we don't know, who live in the Merrimack Valley. Liz Gabry lives in North Andover. She was working from home yesterday when she began hearing helicopters, and she spoke to me earlier today about evacuating.
I said to my son, Graham, I said, go get your things. And I ran downstairs, got the dog cage, put the dogs in the car, grabbed my purse and my computer. And when I got outside, my neighbor was going around with a wrench, turning off some of the gas in our neighborhood, and asked me if I wanted him to do so. And I said, I don't know anything about that. Definitely give it a try. I watched him do it. And then I said, I need to leave. And I left and started to head north through North Andover. So I live very close off the highway, but I didn't go anywhere near there. And I headed up on 133 by the high school, which took me 45 minutes to get onto 495 from there.
Usually a much quicker trip. I imagine they're just everybody is on the road at this point.
Exactly.
Liz, did you understand what you were in the middle of when your neighbor, for instance, asked you to turn off the gas, or when you heard these the helicopters? Did you understand the largeness of this?
I did know because of the different text messages that I was getting from different moms in town, from friends, looking at the news report. So I did know we were in the middle of random gas explosions, but I didn't know what was the cause. And that's when the panic set in. And I did have a couple of moments because, you know, my husband's traveling and I was very scared. And I just wanted to get my son and my dogs to safety.
Your neighborhood also was hit in a way that this was not just a fear and get the gas turned off, as I understand.
Yes. So two streets over from me, a neighbor of mine, their house blew up in smoke in front of their faces. And it's just devastating. I can't express it in another way. And when it hits so close to home in a centralized area, my son goes to school right up the street from where we live, a house by the library when I was trying to leave was also on fire, and those streets were blocked off. It's just really unnerving and scary, and it was awful.
Are you in touch with people today? Have you been texting or other ways?
Yes.
Knowing in your
yes.
neighborhood, so knowing where they are?
I have been texting with a group of people. Everybody is safe and sound and evacuated after I had left, to either friends, family, or neighboring towns, and everybody's doing well. From what I know, there are some streets that have been cleared for people to go back to their houses, pending, obviously, gas needs to be turned back on. my house and street does not have electricity, and I don't know if it's been cleared to go back, for us to go back to our house. We're currently up in Maine, in a safe place.
And if you have to stay in Maine for some time, how will you handle that? Or somewhere that's not home?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not easy, right? You know, we just left, right? So we don't have any of this necessities, but we're going to make it work. We're safe, and that's the most important thing. And, you know, I held my son really tight last night, and, you know, it's just something that will make it work. I just want to make sure it's safe to go back before we go back.
So, Liz Gabbri, thank you so much for joining us in this time and taking a few minutes out.
Thank you.
All right, good luck with everything.
Thank you so much.
That's Liz Gabbri, a resident of North Andover. Stay with WBUR for continued coverage in the aftermath of the gas explosions and fires in North Andover, Andover, and Lawrence. It's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. And today's show, as ever, was solidly produced by Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, Zoe Mitchell, Eve Zuckoff, and Walt Wuthman, with engineer Matt Lissette on the board. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hattie. I'm Jill Kaufman. Join us Monday for Radio Boston.